Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casteris podcast with a K. And here's the house band with their brand new drummer.
I think I know that drummer.
Yeah, I think we may know him. Brian Terranova and James McLean are joining me, Casteris editor Christian Corley, to discuss the most interesting of the past week's Doctor Who news and a few other bits and bobs. Guys, we're both well, are we?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, pretty good. I'm particularly thrilled to be in the presence of Ringo Starr, who's drumming that could only be.
Ringo Starr was the master. That's the beard, isn't it? It's the beard.
And the little
War Chief glasses as well.
No, he'd look like the fat controller from Thomas. And he'd be like Blink, you know, you'd turn around and suddenly he'd move again. And you'd look around, where you'd look again and suddenly he'd be in a different position. You'd have to watch Thomas the Tank Engine to understand the sheer comedy and horror in that. It's a cross between the master and a statue, a weeping angel. It'd be brilliant. It'd be really cool.
It would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It would be.
Yes. There's a comic strip in there, I think.
Yep.
Okay, so, well, let's go get straight into things. We had a few emails and messages about last week's podcast with a K. And some of the things that we discussed, it was purely subjective. It was entirely our own interpretation of things. We weren't rewriting canon or anything like that.
Were we rewriting canon?
We weren't. No, that's what I'm saying. We weren't doing that.
But we've been accused of it.
Not in so many words. No, I'm just generalising.
Where's the Valiard?
So
Ringo, you speak to us, Ringo.
So
it's the only way you can speak to us.
If you've got any, I mean, like. We're discussing the master. I suspect that's a podcast that's going to get listened to over and over again. So if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to it. Tell us what you thought, by all means. But please don't take it too seriously.
What was seriously? Because I've not read any of these comments. What was the feedback? Was it?
Well, one of the feedback messages that we got, and you know, we sorted it out amicably. I was actually on the podcast page itself, which basically kind of suggested that we were not. Correct. Or we were this whole thing about the War Chief and the Monk and Masterland of Fiction, all these other possible former guises for the Master, maybe discounting the Monk and the Master of the Land of Fiction, but including the War Chief, we maybe should have left it in, because perhaps there is dialogue which perhaps suggests that is the Master. It's not explicitly stated, so we don't have to go with it. It's as I say, it's entirely subjective. We were just having a discussion about the Master in general, and not, you know, I'm inclined to go in both areas. I like Brian's thing about the Time Lords of Gallifrey not being like three people, you know.
Right, yeah.
But I also like the fact that, maybe he was the War Chief as well. But, you know,
sorry, roll back a bit. Where is it suggested that he's the War Chief?
Yeah.
Because I'm reading the post now of the gentleman, and as I say, I haven't said, but I will say, and I'm sure Ringo will back me up on this, he's entirely welcome to his own... Thank you, Ringo. Yeah. Two sets of three for yes. One for no. By that, Ringo, we'll be able to get on fine. I'm just looking. It's not just fan theories. Anyone who's read the Target novelization, the Fassa game, watched 80s Masterbind, or read them interviews with Malcolm Hulk and Robert Holmes can attest to. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, mate, but I don't know. I just Target novelizations aren't. I don't think you could honestly say out of all canon they are.
Yeah, exactly. But and that was the point. We've got to stick tenuous. With what's on TV, haven't we? So,
I mean,
yeah, it is tenuous, but it's fun as well. It's nice to speculate.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I like to see new adventures as canon to a certain degree. But then at the same time, if you're discussing for a podcast like this to people, and we know we get a fair amount of listener, that when they're not all going to read the new adventures. So to start getting very angry, saying, well, it's said in, I mean, because there's a lot of stuff in the new adventures which hints to the Master, or actually the Master appears. He appears in the 100th.
First Frontier as well.
Absolutely. So it's not, you know, we could all go down that route, but I think you'd be pushing it to say that it is absolute, it is canon that the War Chief is the Master. I think, especially if you go by Paul Cornell, as you said very recently in very wonderful article, you know, simply as Russell T. Davis said, you know, basically if people don't remember it, it's not canon. And that's a very, very rough way of just sort of saying, you know, canon is flexible and really is only as much, only needs to be as much as the general people will recognize. And then you can sort of be a little more. So, I'm a bit surprised by that comment. It's the one thing I'm surprised someone would come up and attack us on, because I don't think anyone, majority of people, would actually agree that the war chief is meant to be the master. And bizarro.
But let's push on. And hello to that poster. And
well, I doubt he's listening this week. This was our Waterloo. He's not going to be back. But if you are back,
Waterloo thing is actually kind of funny though.
That's a not Portaloo joke.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I didn't get it.
I like that.
Yeah. It's funny.
No, seriously. No, I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, because as I said, the Fassa game does actually quite explicitly say, but then the Fassa game also says that he rescued Adric and Adric didn't die. The Fassa game says a lot of things. And I'd be interested to read interviews with Hulk and Holmes who attest to it, because I genuinely didn't know about that. And that would be interesting. I don't think it changes our podcast anyway, but it is interesting if there is evidence out there which suggests it's a stronger tie-in than I'm aware of. And I've read a lot about the Master and the likes, and I've never heard of that. So please, yeah, if you've got sources, Mr. Miller, throw them our way.
Okay, so let's push on. The Fifth Doctor.
Oh, him.
A script, so he says, with Peter Davison embossed across it.
You know, if you go with certain people that are out there right now, some would tell you we don't have a Fifth Doctor yet and that Peter Capaldi is the fourth. So I don't know who you're talking about.
What the hell are you talking about, Morton?
You've not heard this?
What?
There are people out there, I guess they still don't know about the classic series and they're considering Capaldi as the Fourth Doctor, despite all the references made in the show.
What?
Right, exactly. Go on, though.
I don't know how you can justify that, since the show, in the new show, it actually classifies him, or even if nothing else, shows you the previous Doctors. So surely just a measure of counting would be needed, not necessarily an understanding.
Hang on, no, it's crazy. So what is this counting magic of which you speak?
It is a bit mad, ain't it? I don't know. I mean, I suppose they could say, well, hey, you know, you lot, your brain of Morbius, you don't exactly, you know, you've got even more Doctors, so who are you to talk? And,
all right. I'm confused now. You've really thrown me, Brian.
Yeah, no, it's just, believe me, there are plenty of people out there that have not been counting the classic series. Go figure. Just thought I'd throw it out there, because we are going to be talking about the true fifth Doctor, Peter Davison, here, which we can get back to. Just thought I'd put that out there.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so the Fifth Doctor's got a script for the 50th anniversary, so he says. That's what he says.
Was that a good reaction?
It was brilliant, yeah.
Great, okay, good. Yeah, he says he's got one. Interesting, right?
He says more than that, though, doesn't he?
He says a few things, yes. He says making appearances over that period, which suggests a couple of things. Difficult to say exactly what. Perhaps an appearance in the 50th. Perhaps the paintings thing is relevant. Perhaps it's little mini-sodes on the web.
That sounds likely, doesn't it?
It does sound possible, yeah.
They are sounding. I mean, because he's not saying, yes, I'm definitely in it. He says, I'm making an appearance somewhere over that period of time.
That being said, I mean, we do have to, through reverse logic, the first point was that he has an actual named script.
He has
and
a script.
He has a named script. He wouldn't have a named script if he wasn't appearing in that.
Exactly.
But so, by the same token, Russell T. Davis has copies of all the scripts, because still to this day, Moffat sends them to him as a courtesy. So as a former doctor, maybe it's just a courtesy.
Do you think?
It's a possibility. Listen, I want him to be in it. I would love for him to be in it. But his comment and the script kind of go against each other a little bit. Unless his comment was trying to just say, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. And now I'll just say that I'm making an appearance somewhere. You know, so I would love for him to be in it, and I would even love for mini episodes to be a part of this in somehow, some way. I'm just saying that there's, you know, I'm being the flip side of the coin. That's not necessarily my true opinion. I'm just stating that there are other ways to look at it.
The devil's advocate.
There we are.
The Ballyard. I think that I doubt such scripts are made.
Well, I mean, there could be an argument that if he is appearing in a webisode which is connected, that they might actually. Well, no, I don't agree. As far as I'm aware, the Doctor Who set is actually quite cagey with scripts.
Yeah, exactly. Set,
production.
Exactly.
They're
exactly.
not going to issue unless
there
they're...
are children in the Moffat household. There are children in the Moffat household. There is a small child in the McDonald household. You're not just going to throw a script in the direction of one of them for safekeeping.
I mean, in the end, if he wanted to, would you need to send Peter a script? He could just tell, you could tell David to just give him a little look.
Exactly.
You know, it just seems a bit, I don't know. I think it's quite encouraging. I do, though, agree with Brian that it is, there's a natural caution about getting overexcited. It's, you know, if you take this too seriously, you might take a standard time drum beat like Ringo would express and get too excited and try double time and just mess it all up. Like Ringo does. See, look, he's got excited now. He can't play in time when he gets excited.
That was from me to you, I think, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't speak Ringo.
Oh, okay. Can you hear that?
Oh yeah, you've got the Munchkins back.
We've got Brucey Time Tot this week. Who wants his mummy?
Right. Brucey Time Tot. He's gonna love you for that when he's older.
Bruce. Sorry. Talk amongst yourselves.
Where's the time tot? So you only call him Brucey Time Tot, not to his face?
What I'm doing, I'm putting it on mute while I placate him, you see.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
How do you placate a time tot?
Do
you promise him to have his breakfast?
With bananas.
Yesterday or something.
If you like, yeah. This bit's going. speaking of Doctor Who of the future that we have not yet seen, there's a snippet online, isn't there, of a police box and a pair of people with a bit of very quiet dialogue. I suspect there may be some other photos of said prop. Now, we were talking about this last week, weren't we? Were we talking about it on air, or was it?
We didn't talk about it on air, but there's been suggestions and whispers through fandom of a new police box.
Yes. And how do you feel about that now? Is it a new police box?
I'm not sure. It's hard to tell from the photos. I mean, the thing is, I mean, there is more than one police box prop for the show. There's a couple, isn't there? There's the promo one that they use for promo shots. And
there's a CGI one as well.
There's a terrible CGI one, which they really need to sort out. And there's two standard ones that they swap between. Is there a Brian and John Terry? I don't know what I was going to call you then, Brian. Yeah. You know a bit about the props.
No, honestly, at this point, I'm not quite sure how many they have. I do remember, in the Eccleston era, they started with six. And then in Tennant's era, they kept two of the wood ones and then made, I think, four fiberglass ones. By this point, I know whenever they get to Smith's era, they made, you know, the real one used in the show plus a BBC promo prop. And I know they have more than just one in the show, but I don't know at this point, unfortunately, how many they have.
They have a fiberglass and they have a wood one. I know that at the moment. And
I will... Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it does... I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was talk of a new prop, and that looks to me... I can't tell from the picture whether they've got... If the pillars are narrow or... it's obviously got a terrible paint job. I don't know how that's going to look when it's gone through all the filters for screen. But,
you know, it's weird. It's got some green in the paint, which is hearkening to me back to the Pertwee era. His TARDIS had some green grime on it as well.
Yeah, it's got a sort of 70s feel, hasn't it?
Yeah, I will say I agree with you. I don't know about the column width, but I do think the overall width of the box has gotten, they've trimmed it down because the panels do look a tad more rectangular.
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because we don't know the ratios, whether these photos have been compressed, and it's hard to tell.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you can look at Matt Smith's face and see if he looks odd or anything. I mean, because the one I'm looking at right now is a picture of him standing outside the box with his thumb up, and it's a pretty high-quality photo, to be honest. And you can tell from that the window frames are far more pronounced. I mean, they're thicker than they have ever been distance-wise, it's not width-wise. So they've definitely done something to the windows. But that said, looking at the window frames, at least going by my box and all the research that we did to make my box... Mm-hmm. The windows themselves are definitely more rectangular.
More pronounced.
Yeah. But they're actually like the panes themselves are way more rectangular.
They're
so
very,
the box
very
has
thick.
To be less wide. It definitely has to be.
So we are looking at a modified, by looks of it, a modified 2010.
Yeah, I mean, and the speculation that everybody's having is that this is going to be Capaldi's box. But I wonder if just something happened with the other ones. They decided to do something for the Christmas story with this one just to get them through. But that's a lot of work. So it seems a little odd to go ahead rather than just fix up a remaining one to actually make. Because if they were just going to use this for one story, they've obviously had to make everything thinner. You know, all the panels thinner and taller, you know, well, appear taller. The box height doesn't appear to have changed.
No, I think you're probably right. I'm just looking on a very wonderful resource, if you're into this sort of stuff, called TARDISbuilders.com. And looking at, there is a definite change in the window frame thickness. Oh, yeah. To my dear colleagues, I am just passing on a link just so you can see what I'm looking at. I don't know.
I'm not sure if it worked, but I just tried to send you guys the pictures.
I'm just, yes, 87K, 6783. I have now got them. That's like the one I was just looking at. But if you look there, they've actually, some gentlemen on this forum have actually compared the window frames, and there's a definite thickness there.
Oh, and yeah. I mean, the frames themselves are gigantic on this one.
But it's I'm still not happy with that blue. I mean, I've heard a lot of people just say it looks like a children's toy box blue. And
it is a bit.
It is quite harsh. But if they've adjusted the box, I'll be interested to see how it looks. I mean, everyone said it's too square, so... If the pillars have been narrowed and the doors themselves have been altered to be to have a more rectangular feel to them, then that's interesting. And the size is good because, you know, the original sort of Mark II police boxes were pretty tall anyway. So you can't knock it for the size. It's just the other details. So, yeah, very interesting.
I do find it interesting that they may have made the pillars smaller because originally they were when they made the Eccleston box. Which lasted, I guess, through series, maybe even lasted in that same shape all the way through season 3, because I remember in season 4, the pillars actually got wider.
Oh, really?
And it actually enhanced the overall appearance of the box. It actually made it look a bit more beefy, you know, and gave it more depth, because they may have actually recessed the doors back a little bit further. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it gave that appearance at least. So it's kind of weird that in order to make the box thinner, they actually made the posts thinner as well. It just, I don't know. I don't know if I like that aspect of it, because I do like the bigger columns. Or I did like the bigger columns.
I do like the windows, I must say.
Do you?
Yeah. I'm just having a look.
Oh, I like that they brought the black back, because that's been like, it was an off and on thing in season 5, and then it seemed to mainly stay white. But now they're black again. I know that they appeared black occasionally, but it seemed like they used them far less than they did in season.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. I'm just wondering whether it's the... we saw there was the shots of for the 50th in Trafalgar Square with what possibly I'd have thought was could have been the fiberglass prop, given what they were doing with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wondered if that is an augmented, because the colour... If you go, the link I sent you, if you go back a page, you can see a couple of shots of it there. And it does look very similar, actually, to what we've got. It doesn't look augmented, actually. This one looks the same. No, I think it's different. I think this new one is a slightly different. It's not quite, the panels don't look as square in the new one to that one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The panels are definitely not as wide as they once were, and it's the window frames that really just sell the differences to me. But otherwise, I mean, it's still like, at first glance, you'd look at it, most people wouldn't even notice a change. To be honest, as crazy as it is, I've noticed people who I've known people who didn't even notice there was a change between season 4 and season 5, you know. So most casual viewers aren't going to get it. People like us are really staring at it intently. We're gonna nitpick things, and oftentimes you're gonna pick up things that aren't different. Is one of the things I've noticed. But
yes, definitely.
Definitely, there's those two things are a huge change right now.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the reason people might think it's a bit mad, but for a lot of us, it's interesting because we're interested in props and how props are built, and because they're unusual and very special things. So yeah, that's why the interest is there. These minute changes are fascinating to some people. Maybe not you, dear listener.
Looks like the pebbled windows as well have been made to be whiter
Yes, I noticed that.
If you look at the comparison, they're more gray. And that's one thing I actually really liked. When the four other panes on one window were black, the two pebbled ones were grayed. I actually really liked that look, but it seems like they've taken that away.
They do like to take things away from you, Brian.
They really do.
I know. It does look slightly frosted. If you look on the third page, we should put this link in with the blog, with the podcast. You can see that close-up of the one with the thumb that you just sent.
Yeah.
There is a slight texture to the white, but it doesn't look quite as pronounced.
I don't think it's third page for me. I think it's second page.
It's second page.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah, no. They definitely still have the pebbled glass there. Or I don't know what they call it now. I know on the classic boxes it was pebbled glass. This is more, I don't know what, I always call it a textured glass. I don't know if it still counts as pebbled. They always had the textured frames. It's just that the lighting on them on the previous box, when they did the black windows, was a grayed color behind it when the other panes were black. It does look nice the way it is. I just thought the gray with the black was a good compliment on the white frames.
One query away from the police box on these images. Do we know exactly when they were actually taken? I know I saw on Twitter the guy who took them sort of put up a letter, I think, from the BBC sort of saying there was going to be filming in the area. Yeah. But are these definitely recent? Because there's been a question of whether this is the wig for Smith or whether these were done, whether this is these are far older than people realised and were done earlier. I'm assuming they're recent and that is a wig.
Apparently it's a new outfit for Clara.
Yeah,
and
apparently
people are going by that. Yeah, and the hairpiece is going to be a big definite tell. When somebody gets a good left side headshot of him, you're going to be able to tell, because if you can't see the scar extend into his hairpiece, then you know it's definitely a wig. Because that's the one definite thing with him. You can see his head scar like extend into his hair.
Right. Oh, it's a right profile. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Another exactly. One, yeah. But as a hairpiece, I mean, they did a dynamite job, if that's which I believe it is, but they definitely really did a nice job with that. And it's even cool because as he's walking by, there is a shot of him where he's actually pushing it back with his hands, and I kind of thought, like, I wonder if he's going to have to avoid playing with his hair, because that's one thing I've noticed with the 11th Doctor, he's constantly pulling his hair back, and I wondered if with a wig he wouldn't be allowed to do that, but it seems like he is.
He wore a wig before, didn't he?
Oh, well, when he had the beard.
Yeah,
when they
did,
like, the long hair stuff with that, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, other Doctors have worn wigs. So we should maybe not be so unkind. And I know, you know, I was a big backer of the it's all in the can theory. But, you know, other Doctors wore wigs. William Hartnell didn't seem to have too much trouble with his, did he? So
I didn't know for years that William Hartnell's was a wig. Yeah. Like my younger years as a fan, I had no clue with that. Even Paul McGann, when I first saw the TV movie, I just assumed it was his hair until I found out however long after.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with it, although I do understand Paul's issue with it, where it feels like you're acting like you're wearing a helmet, because if you've ever worn a wig, it does feel very foreign to have something on your head like
that.
You know? But no, if it looks great on film, I mean, what's the difference? What's the point? You know,
again, it's more of a question of it just being interesting, isn't it? That we've obviously that you've got a character. It's not about knocking wigs or people wearing wigs or actors with wigs or in deception. It's just interesting the fact that we know that at the moment he's got no hair, and how the magic of television will be able to give him hair again, and how effective that will be.
I am glad they went with the wig, though. I mean, if they want to somehow write a scene of him with his shorn head in the episode, you know, I'm sure they can knock themselves out and do it. But I think since it's his final episode, I'd rather have him not come strolling in looking like Christopher Eccleston and then do his last episode that way. I think it's more fitting that he leaves with the signature look that he has. So I'm glad that they did go with the wig rather than just say, well, he cut his hair. The Doctor can cut his hair, too, you know?
Mm. Okay. There's been a few new Doctor Who's as we reach the end of the DVD schedule that have been reconstructed. Now, the other day, we gave a mention to the campaign to have Marco Polo animated. Can I just check that? I can't remember if that's true or not.
No, I don't remember that. I remember the campaign to get the Crusaders.
Was it the Crusades? Was it the Crusades?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I'm
pretty damn sure. It sounds
right
to me.
Because I was thinking, damn, I'd like Marco Polo, because Crusades, you've got some of the episodes, and you've got the full audio tracks for other episodes. It didn't seem quite as cool as Marco Polo, but... Okay.
I'll just redo that bit then. So a few days ago, we promoted on Cast Service the a campaign to have the Crusade.
You sure it wasn't Marco Polo?
Well, see, that's the thing, isn't it?
Would it matter? Can we campaign for both?
Well, it wouldn't matter, would it, really?
No, because both deserve it.
I thought that they were primarily just doing reconstructions of stories that were missing
one or two episodes. Exactly, which is why the Crusade is prime.
Is a little more obvious, yeah.
Is a prime candidate for
I mean, I'd love to see them do episodes that are completely missing. This way we have some kind of visual way to view them, but I understand it's costly.
Yeah.
Essentially, and it's a lot of work to go into it. But
unless it turns out that someone's got all of these missing episodes in a warehouse somewhere in the Northwest, we're not going to find out what these episodes looked like. So let's go for the animations.
Yeah.
And, you know, this would be great to do. And it's this pattern that's developed over the last few years. I don't know whether it was accidental or whether it was, you know, the necessity being the mother of invention and that kind of thing. But going back to the invasion, mm-hmm. and we've had animated Cybermen. We've had the Reign of Terror. And we've had the Ice Warriors. And... we've got the final episode of The Tenth Planet. Have I missed any? Is there another one?
Don't think so.
No, I don't think
that's it. Okay. So we've got these animated serials. And we were going to talk just about the Ice Warriors, but we thought we'd kind of maybe open it out a bit into some of the other...
Is Brucey taking down Eucasturbrus Towers?
No, he's driving a car into the side of it. which is... it's a very noisy book he's reading. I mean, for you guys, I've only seen The Tenth Planet and The Invasion myself so far. I haven't had the opportunity to watch Reign of Terror yet. But of these, have you seen The Ice Warriors?
No.
I've seen The Ice Warriors, but not Tenth Planet, unfortunately. I guess you guys got that first, right?
Well, it came out on the Regeneration box set before it got released.
Ah, right, okay.
So that's how I've seen The Tenth.
Jealous of that. But yeah, no, I've seen The Ice Warriors.
Okay, and what did you think of the animation work?
I like it. I like it because it's reminiscent of The Invasion. It's a little different. It's a tad, how will I say it? It may be a tad more cartoony. It's hard to say. It's like a slightly different style from The Invasion, but they tried to keep it in line with The Invasion, I guess, so that it flows with his era, because it's definitely very different from The Reign of Terror. The Reign of Terror, they went with a very stylistic look, very different stylistic look. Mm. But I like it. Watching it was very nice to see those episodes, because, you know, previously, I'm sure you guys had the same thing, but all we had was that little monitor in the snow that gave us like a 15-minute breakdown of those two episodes. You know, so it was great to actually see them acted out. Realizing, though, watching it, as great as it is to have them, and I'm not going to complain, I'm going to ask for more of them and more of them from the people involved with making the animations, just because it's fantastic to have. There is just something that the animation lacks, which is two things. It's facial expressions and body language.
Uh-huh.
Which obviously you're just not going to get them. So, I mean, when you're watching them, realizing that those two things, you just can't get them. It's a little too difficult to do. The animations are just great. I mean, they're very well done. They try to capture a lot of the angles, and they maybe even once in a while try to be a bit more dynamic with the angles. But I don't know. It was great. It was great to be able to watch that story as a whole, because I've been holding off for a couple of years now watching that, waiting for the DVD release, trying not to get myself used to that story with missing parts.
Yeah.
Planet of the Giants.
Of course.
Mm. Oh, right. That episode. Right?
Yeah.
But that's not really, I mean...
I know it's not.
It's not an obvious one, is it? Because it's a reconstruction of a production decision, isn't it? Really, rather than a reconstruction of an accident of time or administration or whatever.
No, it was Ringo's suggestion. So if you don't want to blame it, yeah, it was your suggestion. Stop playing the drums now. You can whisper fine.
That was yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, when our troubles were so far away.
Yes, that one with no drums in it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I've only seen Reign of Terror and Invasion and obviously Planet of the Giants, but I really liked the Reign of Terror because it had a sort of rotoscope sort of effect to it, which,
right,
like the old Filmation stuff.
Well, these ones that I haven't seen, I'm interested to know. Brian, is there a manga anime sort of feel to it?
No.
To the direction of the, right, because with there is a sensation of that with the 10th Planet. There's a slight element of that with various, really? Scenes in 10th Planet. Yeah,
I don't feel that. What they did do is, I guess they've done it with all the ones that I've seen, which really for me, excluding Planet of the Giants, because I don't quite remember that one quite as much. Reign of Terror and the Invasion, I loved how they made the backgrounds try to look as realistic as they could rather than do them cartoony or dull down the animation on them. And of course, being with the characters, you can only get them looking as realistic as you can, you know, but I like the fact that they have that realism to them, and it's not an anime feel to me. It's more of a mix of realism and animation in a sense, if that makes sense. As I say that, I just thought it was a very clean look that fit the era.
I preferred the Reign of Terrors to the Invasions personally, but the Invasion worked for me, apart from that terrible continuity error in the first episode.
Oh yeah, with the outfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They must have kicked themselves.
Oh yeah, I've been hoping for a special edition release of that. I really have. I've really been hoping that somebody's just sitting there, like you said, kicking themselves, going like, "I just want to fix this," you know, like,
yes,
you know, because I would, if I did that, I would have already fixed it and have been begging somebody, please put this in there, please, please do a special edition. But I have to, you know, I have to say the opposite. I actually prefer Invasion to Reign of Terror. Reign
really?
Of Terror was very detailed and it was very stylistic and it was a nice piece, but I actually, so far right now, my favorite animation is The Invasion.
Fair enough.
Yeah, out of all three. Now, not to downplay Reign of Terror or The Ice Warriors, both are great. But I just, you know, maybe I have to pop on The Invasion again, but I loved it. I loved certain things like when all of a sudden now his name is escaping me. I love The Invasion. Who's the main villain? I've forgotten his name.
Tobias Vaughn.
Vaughn, thank you. When he's holding the dematerialization, or rather the TARDIS circuitry, which that was another thing that was a little bummed out. They took artistic liberty with that rather than use the ones that there were pictures of. But when he's holding it and you see the light shining on them, that was a bit of an anime feel, Christian, if you want to go there. I liked that a lot. So I liked those moments, things like that.
Hmm. You're right there, Christian. Don't dry up. Don't dry up on us.
Sorry, what was that? I had to take a moment away then. What was I asked?
You can just little. Ringo's fine. You can let him just give him a couple of blocks and he'll be happy.
Don't worry about what you were asked. Just give an answer pretending like you knew.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think anyone would say the same.
Perfect.
That was seriously, I'm with that.
Yeah, so am I.
Good job. Good recovery.
Very impressed.
Okay. Yes. Well, look, here's fun. You listen to a podcast about Doctor Who. So let's talk about Doctor Who, right?
What? Come on.
Yeah, seriously, I know. But look, it's coming up to Christmas, right? So before we get on to the recommendations, we're coming up to Christmas. You may not have this thing yet. Rather than discussing a recommendation, which we'll do later on, is there anything that you're looking forward to getting that's coming out between now and Christmas?
Yes.
And what is it?
I can't tell her. Santa might not bring it.
He's not listening.
I'll tell you. Okay, good. He's not.
He doesn't have Stitcher.com.
You know Santa?
Yeah, and he doesn't have Stitcher.com app on his phone or tablet or
yeah,
in his car.
Yeah, you missed that last week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I woke up in the middle of the night and went, Stitcher.com! Because I realized...
Were you in a cold sweat as it happened?
I was a cold sweat, yeah.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my drive to work was a long one as I fretted over that the entire hour in.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
For me, what am I waiting for? What am I looking forward to? Yeah. A couple of things. I am looking forward to the wand company David Tennant Sonic. I am looking forward to getting, hopefully, Series 7 complete box set on Blu-ray. partially because I can't bring myself to buy it myself, so I'm hoping some kind soul in my family will do it for me. Not a slight to Series 7. I just don't feel like paying that much right now. That's all it is. I'm being lazy with my money. Yeah, I think really that's it right now. I'm not sure what else there is. Oh, any other future DVDs, obviously. I think there's another one coming out for Christmas. I think we're going to get the 10th Planet. And then, of course, the Doctor's Revisited DVD mm-hmm. should be out soon, the next one.
Okay, James?
That's my ones.
They're good ones.
Thank you.
They're very good ones. I don't know. I mean, I must admit, not so much for Christmas. I am watching, hoping for some prices to come down on things like the Ice Warriors, which I wouldn't mind buying. Because if you're careful, you can see the prices slash by half if you wait the right amount of time.
You can, if you've got the right stores.
You can
as well.
Indeed. You go to the right stores.
If you're looking on the BBC shop, you've got no chance.
No, well, that's I shop at I'm not even going to say, but it's online and everyone goes there, and the prices there are pretty good. But no, I've got nothing actually really that I'm exactly looking forward to. There was a couple of the big Finnish plays that have been advertised of late that still got me fairly interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think which ones there were. There was
The 1963 trilogy sounds interesting.
Yes, 1963 trilogy sounds interesting. The Klein coming back for the Seventh Doctor as well, Daleks Among Us, which was promoted by Meredith on Cerberus.
Yep.
Just very recently, but there was
Mez
another
to
one.
His friends.
So Meredith. I don't know the
Fair
guy.
Enough, yeah.
I'm not going to insult him by suddenly calling him Mez. I'm creepy. Well, I am creepy, but I wouldn't want him to think so. I'm trying to think. So yes, the 1963 trilogy looked pretty good, but no, there's nothing DVD wise. I'm not sure what's left to come out. What is there left? I mean, 2014.
Very little.
The dry.
Very
well,
little. Yeah, very, very, very little indeed. And we then find ourselves in the realms of topics that we can't really discuss on the podcast. So. We should perhaps move on from that. I personally, I'm looking forward to The Vault. Having received a copy of The Doctor's Life in Time and seeing what a brilliant job BBC Books did with that, and having seen The Vault and promoted it on Casterbus in the last few days. This is a book by Marcus Hearn, I believe I'm right in saying. I am. And it's a visual journey through five decades of BBC's most popular family drama, 320 pages, treasures from the first 50 years of Doctor Who. That looks like an intriguing piece of coffee table literature. So I'm kind of interested in that, really. I don't know why. Maybe it's just the name. Maybe it'll be crap. But it feels like it'll be quite good. And as I say, I haven't seen The Doctor's Life in Time to see what a good job they've done with that. I'm optimistic about The Vault.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, it does sound good.
It does. I think it does as well. I think it does well. And of course, I'm looking forward to the 50th anniversary special.
Yes, I am as well. I'm very much looking forward to the moment. I don't know why, but I am.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
I definitely am.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you both are. What I wanted to do, and I'm going to be working on this into a bigger article on Casterbus at some point this week. I've been having discussions with people on Twitter. Basically, I'm aware that people aren't happy with the BBC's schedule for Doctor Who's 50th anniversary. And I'm not sure why this is. I don't know why anyone would be unhappy. I don't know what anyone would want the BBC to do instead.
Is this in regards to this year, or are we talking about 2014?
I think it's in regards to this year. Seems to be. So what I thought, after getting into a discussion with someone last week, which kind of didn't go too well, because they kind of weren't really kind of jiving with my kind of point of view on this.
Did they come from 1967 as well? Jiving.
Yeah, that's right, they did.
Good Lord.
So I put a message out there saying, look, tell us, what is your complaint? What do you think is wrong with the 50th anniversary schedule? So a lot of people actually message saying nothing is wrong with it, actually. But at the same time, you know, like say Rebecca Wright, she said a sense of proportion is needed. The BBC do make other programmes too. Steve Taylor Bryan said, I have no problems with scheduling and have complete trust in both Moffat and the BBC. Too many people like Amon, which I'm inclined to agree with. But then someone else, like say Mark said, this is at Mark Paqui, it lacks imagination, nothing really special that couldn't be done any time. Focus on quantity, not quality. Bland use of personalities, all focus on a short period rather than a build-up. No structure to the event, programming by committee. And I can kind of see that that might be a concern, and there may be a point in there, but I personally don't feel that that's realistic. What do you think?
About the schedule in general or that comment?
Well, about the schedule in general. I mean, I think, you know, we're getting a slew of TV shows.
Yeah.
You know, someone criticised Talking Heads. Well, that's only on BBC Three. You can ignore BBC Three. Most people ignore BBC Three 99% of the time anyway, because it's horrendous.
I think, you know, personally, this is what I think. I think people have to remember that since the show has come back in 2005, it has gotten more specials, more behind-the-scenes features than any other season of Doctor Who ever before it.
Any other program, I think.
Right. And so anything that they're going to do for the 50th is going to, for some reason to some, look like they're not doing much because they've already done so much to celebrate the show.
Yeah.
I think the schedule is fine, and I think the schedule only announces the bigger event things. I think we are going to see mini episodes, you know, which aren't on there, which are just going to enhance what we're getting and going to add to the 50th celebration. And I think there's more people out there outside the BBC who are part of the celebration as well that are going to do their own things. You know what I mean? Like other companies that we know of. Like, for instance, obviously Big Finish has their own 50th anniversary adventure, you know?
And then we've got the celebration itself on the weekend in London.
You know, I think there's a lot. And I mean, you know, could they do more? I'm sure they could do tons if they wanted to. Is it practical? You know, I think there's plenty. I think there's a lot to enjoy right there. I think for me, the main event is the episode. Yeah. You know, the anniversary episode, the 50th special. And, you know, I love Time Crash, and I love the post regeneration scene that was done in 2005. If we got a couple of things like that connected to the 50th, that would make me happy. You know, all these other things that we're getting is just icing on the cake.
Yeah. The other thing as well for me is it's you know, it's all going to kind of snowball as we get there. Yeah. As we get to the 23rd of November.
Right.
Everything's going to build up to it. And then we've got nothing. Then we've got the Christmas episode. Then we've got, apparently, we've got months and months and months to like autumn next year before we get to see the Capaldi Doctor getting into his stride. And when I first heard that this is likely, I was a bit disappointed again. So, oh, another massive gap. But then if you think about it this way, back in 2009, as we anticipated the departure of David Tennant, he was everywhere on TV and radio, not just at Doctor Who, but him himself. He had the BBC Idents with the TARDIS and the snowballs and Santa Claus Doctor and all that stuff, and he went on and on and on and on and on. And by the time he'd meandered through time and space to say goodbye, I don't want to go. A lot of people glad to see the back of him because, you know, David Tennant had been permanently on TV several times a day. With the 50th anniversary coming up and then a Christmas special afterwards, having this big gap until perhaps this time next year, I think is perfect. And it's a bit of a relief to me because I was a bit concerned that people would be getting a bit sick of Doctor Who. Which goes back to actually what Peter Davison was. Again, Peter Davison, he's been in the news a lot this week. He said that he was perhaps concerned that there might be a time where people get sick of Doctor Who. And a 50th anniversary with Doctor Who being wall-to-wall on radio and television and, you know, events and things and audio with Big Finish and magazines and books. And then Christmas just around the corner where any merchandise comes round again and the Christmas special. Having that big gap is a very, very good idea, I think.
You see, I think I'm going to play devil's advocate and say I totally disagree.
Okay.
I think it's been a shoddy approach. I think a lot of it comes down to BBC. I think it comes down to Cardiff side. I don't think BBC wanted it like this, but I think a lot of it comes down to, I'm going to be quite blunt, I think there is a lot of stretching and carrying Sherlock and Doctor Who. And I think that is the reason why you've got these big gaps, because really this year we should have had 13 episodes. We should have had a full season. It seems incredible for a show which is meant to still officially be running for 13 episodes, as has been, I believe, was suggested for the 2014 will be a 13. I can't remember now, but I'm sure someone.
Yeah.
It's mooted. It's going to be a full season, not halves.
Yeah.
And we're in our 50th year, and we can't manage a full season. I don't know. I think it's doing the best out of a bad situation, and regardless of whether you want to sort of attack Moffat and his team for disorganization or a production which should be outputting better, or whether you want to say, well, he's running two shows, there's only so much he can do. Either way, I don't think it's been in the show's interest. As for next year, I think that's a bad move as well, and I don't think that's to do with giving it a break. I think that's to do... There's two possibilities in my mind. One possibility that I did consider was there's been rumblings of the question of whether Moffat might leave soon as well, given Moffat's departure and the tenure that people expect for producers on Doctor Who, and he's sort of slightly overlapping on that. And whether there's any issues where there's been constant rumours of unsettlement between Cardiff and BBC through Private Eye and the like, whether he might be moving on and 2014 might be a gap for production reasons to change a production team. By the sounds of it, he's still on for 2014, so probably not. But then you wonder, is it Sherlock? Is Sherlock again causing stuff to slow down? Because it seems another bit of a similar spin to what we got in for the Series 6 being split, that it was for the children. Well, now there's a long gap between Capaldi being announced and Capaldi being seen, which I do not believe is in the show's interest at all, being that the show needs a bit of a breather. Well, the show's been running at sort of like 6 episodes a year. Now, for a show which is still a flagship of the BBC, especially internationally, I don't think it needs a breather, especially after you've just changed your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That is how you lose interest. You want to capitalise on that ideally and be running a show into April, May. Give yourself production time to do that, but it should be soon. You shouldn't be doing October. You know, if this was America, America would be large. You know, American TV wouldn't be having any of this crap. You know, American TV is very clear. You know, if you want to keep a show running, you keep your schedule. You keep people know when it's on. They know what slot it's on. They know what day it's on. They know what time it's on. As soon as you start moving time, days, and then even when the show's going to air, That's kiss of death over in the US. And to a certain degree, if BBC wasn't a flagship, it probably would be here. So I don't think anything that's happening at the moment is good for the show. It may be the best they can do in the circumstance. And I don't think it's so bad that Doctor Who fans can complain that they're not going to have a year which is going to have a celebration of Doctor Who. I agree. I think they've got a nice setup for the anniversary in November. And you've got... Load, you've got John Hurt, you've got Peter Capaldi being announced, you've got a lot of exciting things. But if you're looking at it objectively, standing back, not as a Doctor Who fan, not as an anti-Doctor Who fan, for a show in its 50th year, you're still running on these half seasons for no apparent reason, apart from the possibility that there's too much, that they can't manage to make full seasons, and you've got to ask why. And then you've got this massive gap again next year, and it just feels like, to me, I'll be quite honest, cards on the table. I mean, he's a smart and talented man, Stephen Moffat, but it needs to change. The production team needs to change if it can't manage 13 episodes a year of a show which is very important to the BBC. And this is the BBC's flagship, 50 years of this show. You know, the BBC should be pulling out the stops if it could and doing something. They shouldn't be, as we've said before, this fear of there's too much Doctor Who this year. It's the one year that you can have too much Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And there's no real indication, I don't think, that people are tiring of it, aside from the fact that the media is saying so, because the media is looking to make a story, build something up, knock it down, and the fact that I think the scheduling is so poor that people aren't feeling certain when it's on, so they're missing episodes. And that, to a certain degree, is the BBC's issue as much rather than Cardiff's. When it's on, it should be on a set time. People know when it's on, they see it. And, you know, and it should be on X amount, 13 episodes every year. That's how it should be. And that's my devil's advocate.
Okay.
Now, I agree with that a lot, because you made a point that I was going to say. With American TV, we do know. And granted, we started doing mid-season splits for various reasons here. But at least you still know now that's going to be the norm. That's going to happen. And it will be back at this time. But it makes more sense. Like, I don't think if TV shows that I had liked back in the day, say if the X-Files took a break of a gap year, and then they said, you know, maybe we'll come back the following year. I don't know what I would have done. Like, I, not knowing that that show would have been back that next year would have really been upsetting, because knowing that it was coming back every year and having me glued to my chair was quite a fun thing.
Yeah.
With Doctor Who, I heard so many people actually say that maybe it needs a break. And I'm like, are you insane? You know,
yeah,
I don't think it
exactly.
ever needed a break. I think even in the original series, it didn't need the break, that the 16-year gap or 9, however you want to count it, if you throw in the TV movie. I don't think it needed that. What it needed was restructuring. It needed new hands to come in. John Nathan Turner needed to step down and get somebody else in there with a different vision. And the show could have still been going. I think the people that feel the show needs a break, outside what you were saying, Christian, I think on the whole, the people who generally would feel that way are the casual viewer. The people who don't, and I don't want to say we live for this show, but, you know, it is a big thing that we enjoy. But the people who don't have a vested interest, that haven't been there since they were kids or haven't picked up the new series and just thought, like, my God, this is amazing. You know, it's just those casual people that are like, oh, you know, this is a fun little show to watch on Saturday, you know, when I'm home, but I'm a little bored with it. You know, those are
but
the ones that may want to break.
At the same time, I still wonder whether that's true. And there's a certain amount of liberal apologism ism in fandom. And the fact is, you know, that the reason Doctor Who sustains is because Doctor Who becomes something exciting to new generations of fans as they get older.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
As long as we keep having babies, there's always going to be a sort of 5 to 10-year-old market who's going to be interested in Doctor Who at the very least. That is a staple. And then you've got, the, as you say, changes in the production to keep it fresh for everyone else.
Right.
Now, if it's kept to sort of like 13 episodes a year and it's kept... And, you know, it doesn't overdo itself in other ways and it oversaturating the market and appearances, and they keep it focused. I think that show can be perpetual. I don't think it needs a break. People who says it needs a break probably find if they miss half a season, they'll be back for the next half because they'll have had a bit of a space. They like Doctor Who. I mean, I've been watching Doctor Who now for over 30 years and I haven't needed a break. So I don't think people genuinely do need a break. They might need a break from maybe... You know, they can take their own personal breaks, but I don't think people will en masse take a break. I think that's a conceit of the media that does that because they want to have a story. They want to have something to get people to talk about.
I also think taking a show and putting it on break is kind of like them conceding that,
I agree.
We've it's run out of things here. We have a problem with this show. We need to take it off while we rethink. And it's like, no, you don't need to do that. Like, look. I know that I've been vocal about my opinions on Moffat's era, but like you said, he's a very creative and talented writer, and I think he has fantastic ideas.
Yes,
I really do. And I think that maybe if he wants to stay in charge of Doctor Who, maybe take a step back and be the ideas man, let other writers, make him be the executive producer and put in a main writer or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe bring him back just as a writer. I don't know. The show needs some kind of refreshing at this point, and taking it away from us is not what it needs. It needs someone to take over the reins somehow, some way, and give it that refresher.
I mean,
that's all it needs.
I think my final point is that I agree with people that I think what's happening now isn't going to kill Doctor Who. I think that's important. Not one of these people who are saying the way they're doing Doctor Who is going to run it into the ground. I don't think that's true at all.
No.
But what I think you can say is how they're dealing with Doctor Who at the moment isn't helping Doctor Who. It's not in its benefit. For God's sake, you spend all this money on the 50th anniversary. You have a brand new Doctor, and then Cardiff can't do any more till the autumn. That to me is not helping Doctor Who. That's the time where it doesn't need a break. It's had a massive revision. It's had a new period. It doesn't need a break now. What people want to see it. There's, you know, it's consumerism. Consumers want the next bit. You know, if you've got pie and they like the pie and you've got dessert, you don't hold the dessert back for 20 minutes. They want the dessert now. That's when they'll have it. They might not have it tomorrow because tomorrow they may have changed their mind. But while they're into the dessert at Christmas, get it to them. So, yes, I don't think it's going to kill Doctor Who. I don't think Moffat is destroying Doctor Who. But I don't think whoever's choices these are, at the BBC, BBC Cardiff, Stephen Moffat, whoever, I don't think it's doing any good. And I think people who try and pretend that it needs a break or that this is going to help the show, it's not. And I'm off my soapbox. Apologies, dear listener and
yes,
Christian.
Yes, come on down. Ringo says to come on down as well. So
he brings me down.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ringo, don't bring him down. Let's do. I mean, I can see both points of view, and I, you know, I'd like 13 episodes. To be honest with you, I'd like 52 episodes. But
I just want stability. If they turned and said to us, we can only do 7 episodes every year, I would say, fine, you guys know what you're doing. You've got the budget. You've got the skill. You've got the professionalism. I accept your point of view.
This year we get 10 episodes in total.
Yeah, it doesn't feel the product doesn't feel stable to me. As a consumer, it feels unstable, and that's because, as I say, these very simple premises of TV production and audience and consumerisms, I don't feel are being met properly, and that to me is a shame.
Have you been on a course or something?
Well, I mean, I'm an observer. I spend a lot of time looking at television, reading about television, analysing television. You start to see patterns and trends. And as I say, I'm not saying this is going to kill Doctor Who, but I don't think you can pretend that instability is good for a TV show or any product. No.
Although, then again, of course, there's the other side of the coin. We watch telly in a very different way now, so we don't necessarily need Doctor Who to be on at the same time. And the audience figures, as revealed in an excellent link, which I haven't actually shared on Casterbus, but I will share it in this week's podcast show notes. What culture usually do, I'm going to swear now, usually cover Doctor Who in the shittiest way possible. So very, very cynical lists like top X reasons why Matt Smith sucks as the Doctor and shit like that. But what they have done recently, one of their contributors has outdone Tom Spilsby in Doctor Who magazine and put together the best list of statistics for Doctor Who's audience figures over the years since 2005, and all that we've seen really, if there is a slight decay in figures since 2010, but it's no different to the decay in figures from 2005 to 2010.
But this is what I'm saying, this is what I mean, is that I don't think it's actually damaging the show. I don't think the show's losing viewers by this, but I don't think it's gaining viewers. I don't think it's maximizing its potential. I don't think any show which has got unstable scheduling maximizes its potential. And that's just with any product. If you're whatever you're selling, if you've not got a certainty in your market when your stuff's available, you're going to have a certain it's not going to maximize your potential. No. That's what I mean.
I will say, as proof of that, you know, not everybody checks the Doctor Who fan sites. Not everybody even checks like the BBC.
Not
or
everybody even checks Casterbrus. Believe that.
Exactly. Hey. Right? Weird, right?
Crazy.
But I'd be surprised if we've got a listener at this point.
Hello.
I stopped listening to the both of you a long time ago today. But anyway.
Bless.
But my friend contacted me the other day to ask when Series 7 was airing. Oh, and listen, I know he had a kid recently. And I know he started a new job, but he's never really been one for, like, he's one of my friends I grew up with. We watched Doctor Who on PBS together. You know, we got bought all the books and the comics and the VHSs and so on. Everything. We did everything related to it. But he just doesn't check the websites for it. He doesn't look for
it. So which Series 7? Did you mean last year's Series 7 or this year's Series 7?
He was still looking for the end of the ponds. He had no clue because what he had heard was that the season was going to be delayed and there was a split. So he kept waiting to hear news trickle down to him when it was airing, because generally he relied on friends. And for some reason,
like you.
I had mentioned it, but apparently
what's
I had
friend
not.
Are you?
I'm not a very good one. But no, my point is that while he was extremely delayed on it, I mean, just imagine how many people were delayed getting to either the first half of Series 7 or the second half of Series 7, just because, you know, they may not be looking at the news and review sites or may not be regularly watching those channels. They may be tuning in specifically for the one show that they enjoy. And if it doesn't have that set time slot that we're used to, you know, then you are going to lose people that way. You're going to confuse people that way. They may come back and they may pick it up later, of course. But, you know, you're definitely going to trip people up. Now, like I said, his case was definitely extreme in the fact that he was looking for the beginning half of Series 7, but still, I forgive him because he's just had a newborn baby. So.
Okay. Not an old-born baby, but a newborn baby.
It was definitely a new one, yeah. Okay. No, it wasn't a retro thing or anything like that.
Okay. Well, recommendations time, I think. And I'm going to start this week, because it ties in with what we've just been talking about. I've been watching the Series 7 boxer, Series 7B boxer.
Yeah.
And I've only watched the first two episodes, which are The Snowmen and The Bells of St. John. Two things strike me. Both episodes seem extremely well produced, extremely well directed, and they feel, they both feel, although they're very different, they both feel related to each other in a way that perhaps the last two episodes weren't. When I say last two episodes, I'm talking about the Nightmare in Silver and The Name of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why this is, but they're both very good episodes. I did enjoy The Snowman a lot, but I'm really enjoying, and I believe I mentioned this back in the spring when The Bells of St. John aired, really enjoying the whole, it's very Sherlock in the direction and the on-screen the on-screen graphics for the messages and the Wi-Fi and all that kind of thing, and it's very fast moving as well. So certainly enjoying that. So Series 7 box set would be my recommendation. Series 7B box set would be my recommendation for this week, I think. And Castorvis magazine as well, which is now available for iPads and Android tablets.
For my recommendation, which yours are very good, I heartily agree with Castorvis magazine there. It's a fine piece. Personally, I won't even get into that. I'm going to recommend, of course, The Ice Warriors, since I have seen it, and I can recommend that the animation is worthwhile. But not only that, since I had given myself a break from this story, which it was one that I really did enjoy when I did watch it on VHS a lot, it's the production of it, the sets. When they go into the ice caves, I was really struck by how nice they look. You know,
The Ice Warriors or the caves?
The caves themselves, like the sets, basically, yeah. The set construction of this episode, because like basically if they were to do that episode today, they might, you know, they would do a really good job, I'm sure, but I can imagine there being a lot of like actual ice, you know, blue crystallized looking things all around, but this set looked like it was just, you know, did you ever see big mounds of snow that had just you know, a path had been plowed through them, and then you see what the walls of the snow looks like? It kind of had that feel to it. It felt like that these were just caverns of snow, and maybe more along the lines of what Hoth looked like in Empire Strikes Back. And I was really impressed how well they looked. I think the only time that it ever seemed a bit shoddy to me was when there was one scene where they did an avalanche in the cave, and you got to see the roof rock around a little bit. But aside from that, I was really impressed. So I think the production values on this episode and the story, of course, and the animations are all worth it. I would definitely recommend The Ice Warriors.
I finished watching the Tribe of Gum, moved on to the Daleks and Edge of Destruction. I don't think I'll linger on either of those because people just know how very good they are. I especially enjoyed the direction on the first episode of Edge of Destruction, which is very, very, very good. Ending of Edge of Destruction is a bit mixed. I mean, you don't really, I don't know if you totally believe Barbara's logic in working out what's going on about time being given back to them and everything. It seems a big leap of faith. Maybe the TARDIS gave her a few telepathic hints, but characterization, that story is brilliant. It's really, really does sort of culminate the whole thing of the beginnings of them cementing themselves as a team and sorting out the issues, giving them a far bigger bond by the end of that story. So yes, New Beginnings, I would recommend. I also went on and did the adventure games, which I never done before. I pulled two of those off the BBC. The first one in TARDIS, City of the Daleks and TARDIS. And I have to say, begrudgingly, I was doing video games for Doctor Who at that time, and it is they're very good, very, very enjoyable, very simple but straightforward affairs, a little sluggish maybe on the controls, but I'm not going to argue on a freebie. So if you still haven't got those, they're still available from the BBC website. Google them. They're well worth a fiddle or two.
Yeah.
And there was one other thing that I watched the end of Time again yesterday.
All right.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I still like that. I was saying to a friend just how, in a weird way, it was very ballsy of Davis to really milk that ending and really pretty much give it the ending to his era. I mean, it was perhaps arrogant in some respects, but there's some really nice moments, which I know fans complain about, but having, you know, that little bit between Mickey and Martha The lovely bit with Joan's Verity great-granddaughter, you know, and the fantastic bit with, he's gone about it, old Cribbins. It is just such a beautiful send-off. It just amazes me. People go, oh, God, it's just such a load of melodrama. But you think, you know, you'd love to, if you didn't have that, you'd be so upset to find out that there was out the extra scenes that were missing, were a whole load of scenes where he goes back and meets all his old companions. It's a lovely moment.
Yeah, I never understood why people didn't like that myself.
It's great. It's absolutely great. And the other thing I didn't watch this week, but on the same note, if there's a lovely extra which people need, I'd never been aware of, which on series 6A, isn't it, with the missing scene was never filmed, but they storyboarded for with Rory Williams' dad
7A,
getting the
7A.
Sorry, 7A. Again, a scene that should have been there and wasn't. So you get it the other way around on that circumstance.
Yeah.
And that, I think, it was a greatly missed scene where, if people don't know, where Rory's dad finds out about his missing son and Amy in an unusual Moffat-induced, twisty, timey-wimey way.
Sorry, did you say Moffat-induced? I think what you actually meant was in a weird, timey-wimey, Back to the Future-induced.
I suppose so.
Timey-wimey.
I thought I'd ragged on Moffat too much today, so I thought I would leave that off and give him the credit where it's due.
Okay.
It's funny you should say that, because I've actually bit my tongue a little bit during this podcast as well, because I have felt I've been doing the same. And, you know, while I do feel they're honest opinions, I don't feel I express enough how much... I don't think I express the good things that he does enough. So I feel you've made a fair comment there.
I mean, I was thinking just... that I was watching a bit of Good Man Goes to War the other day, and I was thinking, unfortunately, I just get the feeling that you get the feeling of a man who's got too much on his plate and isn't focused enough. But the idea of a good man going to war, which I think should have been far more epic, and, you know, them being very smug with their little prison with Amy, and then seeing like in the Big Bang, a massive sod off fleet coming with the Doctor, that is what you needed to justify River saying, you know, is this what you've become?
Yeah.
Someone who can, if he wants to, he'll break every law, bring everyone that he wants to go and get one person. Yeah. Sort of almost like Water of Mars type characterization. That's what it needed. It needed to be a bit more epic in scope, but the idea was very good. And I still think the idea for the 50th is very good as well. So yeah, you've got to take the good and the bad.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll bring this week's podcast with a K to a close. Just a last thing, if you haven't seen it already or heard it already, there's a... we haven't done this already, have we?
I don't know what you're going to say.
The John Guiler thing. We didn't do this, did we?
Oh, no, we didn't, did we?
No, we didn't. Oh, goodness for that. Hell. We can do it now at the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
John Guiler, the voice actor who voices the first Doctor on Planet of Giants and has done various private recordings for people, has done a little sketch which is on Casterbridge now via SoundCloud. Basically Frank Boff talking to Tom Baker about a time-space visualizer device that the BBC has got to see into the future. It's a bit of silliness, as he says himself, and it's just there for a laugh. So if you're in need of one, click that link at the bottom of the show notes and press play.
It's very good, and it's a reminder, as we've been talking about, the 50th year, and it is the devil's advocate to my devil's advocate, is the beautiful thing about the 50th year is maybe, while I'm saying the BBC hasn't perhaps, and BBC kind of haven't done enough to sort of schedulise their stuff better, if we take that aside, there's so many wonderful stuff coming from the wider scope of Doctor Who fandom. You've mentioned The Finish, you've mentioned the BBC books, there's loads of great stuff. Then you've got individual efforts, like we talked about last week about Peter Davison and Sylvester McCoy, in a possible classic Doctor little moment for the 50th. And then you've got people like John Guiler doing a little bits of fun, which just fits in with the year and makes it a little more special.
Totally does. So that's it. And we'll speak to you again next week. Goodbye, listener.